The fact that the people of Esh-Sharkiya province, where I come from, are generous goes without saying. But their being so impetuous in their generosity as to bring in the bride is another matter. In fact, it was a strange custom of theirs which they stopped only about 2 years ago. When a country girl married into another town, it was usual on the wedding day for her entire family to go with her to the groom's town. And since the roads in those far-flung provinces were not safe in those days, it was also the custom for the family to be accompanied by a great number of the people of the town, walking in a long procession headed by the camel on which the bride rode, and which was usually led by the groom himself or a man who was his deputy. That was not unusual. Indeed, it was the custom in all country weddings all over Egypt. But what was unusual, and unique to the province of Esh-Sharkiya, was that when the bride and her procession passed by the towns and farms lying on the way, the people from those places, young and old, would all come out to greet them and invite them to call on their respective homesteads. And to prove the sincerity of the invitation, they'd have a beast slaughtered and its head impaled on a long pole. They would wait until the procession drew near, and then go forward to meet them, presenting them with a fait accompli by saying, "Kindly step this way. The beast is slaughtered, and your dinner is prepared. Tonight you will be our guests." Naturally, the bride's people could not accept the invitation, explaining that this was the wedding night, and that there was no time to pay calls or accept hospitality on the way. The hosts would not accept the excuse, taking the refusal as an insult, whereupon they would insist more vehemently, while the bride's people refused more emphatically. Very often the contest ended with a brawl, involving violence and abuse, and not infrequently a few dead or wounded. But invariably it ended in one of two ways. Either the bride's party won and proceeded unmolested to their destination, or the other party won, in which case the defeated company was led forcibly into the town and compelled to accept the hospitality. In most cases, it was the bride's people who triumphed because it was their pride and honour they were defending, whereas in the case of the people of the various towns, it was merely a perfunctory show that they put up to demonstrate their generosity, but not to the extent of exposing themselves to danger. This had been the custom for centuries, until at last it was abolished, but only in recent times. The reason was a young girl from the village of Kafur Azab, who was betrothed to a man from another town. On the day of the wedding, the whole town went out, as usual, to see her to her new dwelling. On the way, they were stopped by a huge black giant who stood in the middle of the road, barring their way. No sooner had the people laid eyes on him than they were seized by panic, since they were not particularly noted for their courage. Originally, Kafur Azab had consisted of a number of big families who had gradually disintegrated because of poverty and the scarcity of land. Eventually, it deteriorated into a hamlet inhabited by thousands of belligerent individuals callously bent on destroying one another. They were all petty landowners who owned at most only a fraction of a fedan and whose greatest ambition was to bring that fraction up to a whole. Their merchants, if they could be called that, were mere hawkers who carried their wares in bundles which they hauled on their shoulders on market days. There were at least 50 grocery shops in the village, none of whose capital exceeded £50. There were hundreds whose only profession was to make tea and coffee, and whose only capital was the tea kettle and the tumble-down shack where they lodged. There were men of religion, and Quran chanters, and bean rissol vendors who stood selling after prayers at the door of the mosque. There were basket weavers and storytellers and petty thieves and brigands in abundance. If there was a vacancy for a watchman's job, there would be 100 applicants, all falling over one another to get it. A man who managed to find employment superintending cotton worm pickers during the picking season considered himself born under a lucky star. Yet, in spite of their dire poverty, or perhaps because of it, they never ceased from lodging complaints against one another. Reports from Kafur Azab of attempted murder, armed robbery or rape never stopped pouring into the police station. The smart ones were those who filled their pockets without worrying how. A man who skimped and pinched to save 1 million was a man with talent. A land superintendent who set a price on his signature was considered smart. So it was not surprising for anyone from Kafur Azab when such things as honour and courage were spoken of, to turn down his lip and ask with contempt, "How much is that worth on the market?" That day, they dutifully set out behind the bride to see her to her new home. Their real motive was the sumptuous wedding dinner they were hoping to get on the way. Potatoes and heaps of meat covered with hot, freshly baked bread, not to mention the sweet courses and the free entertainment, perhaps even a cigarette to crown the day. It is not hard to imagine their apprehension, then, on seeing that black giant rising against the skyline to bar their way. Panic-stricken, their ranks broke up, and they whispered amongst themselves and craned their necks to see what was up. They had no one they could delegate to negotiate with the giant, as they had no leader. As a matter of fact, the people of Kafur Azab had never been too keen on appointing a leader, as each one of them wanted that role for himself. But in this instance, leadership was fraught with danger, and it took them a long time to find someone willing to speak on their behalf. Some suggested Sheikh Ragab Abu Shama'a, not because he was the owner of 3 whole fadans, which he had bought inch by inch through depriving himself and his children of his own buffalo's milk, but because he was the wisest and most moderate. In other words, the most timorous. It was wise to have such a man for a leader in a situation where daring could be foolish, perhaps even bordering on ill manners. Sheikh Ragab accepted with great reluctance, and only after he had been begged several times. He shouted at the procession to be silent. Then he kicked his stumpy little donkey and trotted up to the giant, dismounting respectfully within a little distance. "Good day to you," he said, in the fawning tone which distinguished the inhabitants of Kafur Azab.
"Good day, nothing," returned the giant peremptorily, his eyes letting off sparks. "You turn right, this way."
"Where to, if you please?" asked Sheikh Ragab even more unctuously, feigning total innocence.
"You're our guests for the night."
"Whose guests, pray?"
"You're the guests of El Sandik Bey. We are his men, and I am Ambar, his servant."
Sheikh Ragab tried every means by which to extricate himself from the situation. He even inquired after the impaled head of the slaughtered animal, pleading that since it wasn't there, they had a right to decline the invitation. But he was told in a manner which couldn't stand argument that the beast had actually been slaughtered and that they had no choice but to comply by good means or bad. "Well, just what is it you want, friend?" asked Sheikh Ragab.
"We want you to call on our farm without another word," replied Amber.
"By all means," said Sheikh Ragab, kicking his donkey again. "We shall be honored to be your guests. Just don't upset yourself. This way, boys," he shouted at his company as he motioned for them to follow him. The enormous Amber couldn't help raising an eyebrow at this sudden and unexpected capitulation, which robbed him of the fight he was looking forward to bragging about for days to come. He marveled at these people who laid no store by their pride. Nevertheless, he took the camel by the bridle and led the way to the farm, followed by no less than 500 of the inhabitants of Kafur Azab, some riding, some walking, with their slippers tucked under their arms and the hems of their gulabias caught between their teeth. Shortly, they came within sight of the El Sandik farm. Attracted by the noise, the bey came out to watch what he thought was a fellaheen wedding procession. But he was astounded to see the crowd stop at his gate, led by no less than Ambar, his servant.
"Wait here, and don't move," said Ambar to Sheikh Ragab.
He left them there and turned towards his master with much the same demeanour as Tariq bin Ziyad after he had conquered Spain.
"My bey, we have brought in the bride," he announced in the tone of a victorious hero.
The bey only stared at him, unable to understand. Suddenly, he seemed to remember having heard of some such custom. His father had told him. But then that was a long time ago, when he was only a boy, in his father's day, and his grandfather's before him. Those were the days of plenty, when he heard it said they had owned 1,500 fadans and 4,000 head of sheep. But where was all this now? The land was gone, and so were the days of plenty. The guest's house was torn down, and the crop was mortgaged to several banks even before it was harvested. Only Ambar remained from those better days, the last of the family slaves from the days when they used to own them by the score. And now the fool goes and asks in those cohorts from Kafur Azab, a famished, worn-out battalion who must have starved themselves for days in preparation for the wedding feast. Blows and torrents of abuse fell on the miserable and uncomprehending Umber. What had he done wrong? How many times in the past, in the days of the Bey's father, had he brought in brides to call at their farm, only to be commended and praised and generously rewarded? And now he gets beaten for his good work. Surely it seems masters too have gone bad like the times. The Bey gave his servant one of two choices. Either he'd get rid of that crowd, or he would shoot him dead. Amber, understandably, opted for the first, and he was back like a shot to negotiate with the Sheikh Raghab. The fiery sparks were gone from his eyes. His features drooped sadly. It was his turn now to speak unctuously, apologizing profusely, explaining it was all a misunderstanding, that the Bey knew nothing of this, taking all the blame on himself. But there was nothing doing with Sheikh Raghab, who sat up in the saddle and declared to Amber, backed by all 500 of the inhabitants of Kafurazab, that they were there to stay. Their dignity would not let them turn back, having come this far on the persistent invitation of El Sandik Bey, who was bound to honour his word. This was perhaps the first time in their history that the people of Kafurazab had ever stuck together. The footsore Amber kept shuttling backwards and forwards from the Bey to Sheikh Raghab, conveying messages, taking care to conceal what the one said of the other, and hoping all the time that his efforts would succeed. All in vain. When it became clear to the Bey that if he persisted in withdrawing his invitation, he was going to be exposed to all and sundry as a miserable miser and made the laughingstock of the area for miles around, there was nothing for him but to take them in. All night he was on his feet, arranging for covers and plates and food to fill up those hundreds of hungry stomachs. But the first thing he did in the morning was to sack Amber, preferring to part with that last vestige of grandeur rather than suffer any future disasters the latter might bring on him. As for the bride's company, having contentedly sipped their morning coffee and drawn on their first cigarettes, they started on the remainder of their journey with no end of praise for Sheikh Raghab and his wisdom. Any doubts as to Sheikh Raghab's ability as a leader were completely dispelled, and from now on they all became his staunch followers. They even went so far as to hold the bride's camel back, making way for Sheikh Raghab to ride at the head of their procession. No sooner had they left the El Sandik farm behind, their hearty laughter rising from their satiated bellies, than they were stopped by a crowd representing the people of El Roda, who had been waiting for them by the bridge. They went through the same motions, Sheikh Raghab affecting the same innocence. Hardly had the word invitation slipped from their leader than Sheikh Raghab was already heading for their village, waving for the rest to follow. Thus, the village of El Roda found itself in a predicament. For how could they accommodate 500 people when its own population did not exceed 200? In vain they struggled to extricate themselves, arguing that they were not adequately prepared. But Sheikh Raghab made further argument impossible by declaring blandly that anything will do. And so they progressed from town to town and from village to village, even if they were stopped by only one man, and no matter how perfunctory the invitation appeared. They reached their destination after 7 days, eating, drinking, and smoking free. Even their mounts had fed lavishly on barley and clover and beans. After this, the people of Esh-Sharkiyah province decided it would be wiser, after all, to curb their generosity, and eventually they renounced the custom of bringing in brides.